Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions for the professor, you can text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So what do you make of reporter Jake Heaps breaking the news that he's got a source that says the Seahawks are in pursuit of Jamal Adams?
No, I'm sure there's accuracy there because, you know, John Snyder, he doesn't turn down any possibility to talk about a deal. Problem is, I just don't see anything happening because, again, it's going to cost, you know, a high draft choice. It's going to cost a lot of money because, you know, he's going to come here wanting $14.5 to $15 million a year, and the team is already strong at the position right now, so strong that Dave Wyman is having trouble getting Marquise Blair on the field because, you know, Quandre Diggs is a real good one as the free safety position. Bradley McDougal is good, and, you know, you're trying to get that on. So it's almost like an overdue, but I guess, you know, if like John's going to always do, if it's the right price and there's something there, you're going to do it.
Well, John, how big of a problem has he been with the Jets as far as, I mean, if it's on par with the way that Clowney was in Houston, then, you know, we were kind of speculating that maybe the closer they get to camp, the more likely they might let him go for a little bit less just because, you know, teams get in that, you know, that mode. They want to get their roster down. They want to plan. They want to know who's going to be there. And sometimes it seems like they start off saying, okay, it's going to be a first and a second and a player. And it often goes down a little bit as the closer we get to camp.
Yeah.
But my question, I guess, is how bad has it been there? And, you know, is the relationship that bad between Adams and the Jets?
He's making it bad, no question about it, because, you know, he's called out once Adam Gase. You know, he's asked to be traded in so many different ways. And you can see that he's unhappy, you know, not having any contract negotiations whatsoever. And, you know, first off, who is Jamal Adams? I interviewed him on Sirius last year, and I was totally impressed. I mean, he knows the game of football. He's smart. He is a great, great player. Now, again, you know, I say this kind of laughingly. It's like, okay, I think he's only had two interceptions in his career, because he's more of a strong safety than he is a free safety. But I say that knowing who is the highest paid defensive player in unrestricted free agency. And the answer is Byron Jones, who ended up, you know, getting the deal down in Miami for $16.5 million, not $22 million like Clowney wanted, but $16.5. He was the highest paid guy, and he only had two interceptions. But, you know, this guy can hit. He's smart. He's a good leader. But right now he's upset. Now, the only thing is what he still doesn't appreciate is that hardly anybody can do any deals right now. I mean, you look at the 14 you know, free agents right now who are franchise guys. My guess is at the most only two are going to get done, Justin Simmons and Dak Prescott. The other 12 are going to be on one-year deals. And with not knowing what the cap's going to be, you know, getting a deal done is really tough. Now, I say that knowing that Patrick Mahomes, you know, got one done and got $45 million a year in, you know, money, but also he did it not getting any raise in the next 2 years. So in the end, it's like, you know, Jamal, they can't negotiate with Jamal right now, and they still want to keep him, but it looks like he's probably going to hold out.
Well, and the thing is, John, let's say the Seahawks did pull the trigger and make a deal somehow. And if you brought in Jamal Adams, and then let's say Quentin Dunbar is your starting right cornerback, and you got Shaquille Griffin, it'd be great for 1 year, but how would you be able to afford to keep all three of those guys?
No, it's going to be tough because, you know, you probably do this at the expense of, you know, you do it at the expense of Shaquille Griffin or Dunbar because, I mean, you want to take care of the cornerback position and it's taken care of. And Trey Flowers is still a good player who's going to be under contract. But, you know, if you do something with Jamal, then you're basically giving up on Bradley McDougal. That's going to be out the door. And again, how do you get Marquise Blair on the field? So it's a nice thought. John's going to stay in it. I'm sure, like, for example, John's probably going to keep in touch on Chris Jones, you know, the franchise player for the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, because I don't see anything getting done there. But in the end, it's going to be hard to get deals done, you know, because you're talking, again, in Jamal's case, you know, his numbers are low right now because all he has is the you know, the fifth-year option next year and his fourth year of his rookie contract. But I think it's nice to keep on top of it, but I don't see anything happening.
So, John, where if Adams doesn't end up here, and it sounds like that's a long shot, yeah, where do you think is the logical landing spot?
Well, and his logical landing spot is Dallas, but that's almost as silly as you know, some of the thoughts that you know, Jadeveon Clowney wants to go to Dallas or New Orleans, because they're the two teams that can, among them, that can handle them the least. And the reason for that is, you know, they've got so much money tied up next year, and they've only had, remember, both teams have not signed a draft choice. You got $11 million of cap room right now for the Cowboys, $9 million for New Orleans. And, you know, if you pick up, you know, Adams, you know, where are you going to get the money from? They've got, you know, if you have to double franchise, you know, Dak Prescott, now you're at $145 million for eight players next year. And you add Jamal Adams, you know, you're going to be more. But I think that it's going to be tough for him to find a team. But also, I don't see any desire right now for the Jets to trade him.
John, what do you project Bobby Wagner's career? Somebody from, I believe it was the 253, asked, you know, how many more 100-yard or 100-tackle seasons can he have? But I'm just wondering, he's been fairly healthy, mm-hmm, and hasn't had any chronic ongoing things and keeps himself in great shape. So I feel like it could be quite a while. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to think that, you know, three more years, four more years. I mean, and you're going to be more sensitized to that than anybody else, is that, you know, linebackers, particularly if they keep themselves in great shape, can go a little bit longer. And middle linebackers can go a little bit longer. And so the one thing with him is he came into the league with such great speed that even if he loses a little step or two, he's still fast and he's good. And of course, you know, Hall of Fame linebackers, and, you know, he's projecting right now to have a potential Hall of Fame career, I think can go to their 35.
Yeah. Hey, John, going back to Jamal Adams for a second, he had 6.5 sacks last year from the strong safety spot. Does that suggest, I just always wonder why the Seahawks don't blitz a little more than they do right now. And I know it's Pete Carroll's philosophy and everything, but do you think they should maybe change it up a little bit? And understanding that, you know, McDougal's not as good a player as Adams, and Blair isn't either, but, you know, just coming from different directions to change it up every once in a while.
I don't know if Dave and Bob are going to agree with me, but I think that they blitzed more last year than they had at any time in the last 4 or 5 years. And the reason they did that is that they conceded, I think, internally and mentally, that they just didn't have the pass rush. And that's why they went more into zone as opposed to man. That's why, you know, they had to try to keep the play in front of them. And, of course, they did, you know, they had corner blitzes and safety blitzes and all those different things. But remember, you know, what we're talking about, why did he have the 6 blitzes? And it shows that he can do it. He's got the mad, maniacal Greg Williams as his defensive coordinator, who's gambling just about on anything. And remember, when you blitz, you gamble. And that's sometimes you're going to get burned. And so, you know, they blitzed more last year than I can remember in the last 4 or 5 years.
John, the 360 wants to know, and again, you guys can text in any questions you've got for the professor to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. 360 says, John, what are the chances Clay Matthews ends up in Seattle? And if he does, how many sacks do you think he comes away with?
I don't see any chance of him coming here because, again, he's a linebacker, not a defensive end. And sure, he can put his hand on the ground and do it, but it's like this team has, you know, 4 guys competing for 2 starting spots at linebacker. Do you really want to add another linebacker? And again, I know that, you know, he can, you know, be in that rotation, but your rotation right now is so big as far as guys that can, you know, rush from the Leo side, because, I mean, you've got Bruce Irvin when he's not out there at strong safety. I mean, you've got Benson Mayoa, you have Daryl Taylor, and you also got Alton Robinson. So it's like, I think that would be, I don't see that being a fit. And again, he's, what, 35?
Yeah. Hey, John, we haven't, we talked a little bit about Ngakoue. We haven't heard much about him. What does it sound like? Are things starting to calm down? I know he's having a Twitter spat with the son of the owner at one point, but things calm down there?
No, is he more, not at all. No, it's just, no, it's the same. I mean, he doesn't want to be there. They want him there. They know they can't get the value that they were seeking for him. because you know, they didn't get a first or a second round pick on an offer, and so they didn't make the trade. And so, and it's pretty easy to see what he's going to do. He's going to pull a Clowney. He's going to hold out all the way to the last week of August, and then see if he can, you know, force some kind of a trade. You know, he doesn't get any kind of a fine because, again, he doesn't have a signed contract. And so, you know, in the case of Unique, it's going to be, hey, see you in August.
Richard Sherman made a good point on Twitter today, John. Don't you think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, talking about, boy, it's going to be okay for us to have full-fledged contact on the field, but we can't exchange jerseys after the game. That seems kind of ridiculous.
Dave likes the fact they're not going to do that, though.
Well, yeah, they're...
Well, Jim's the one. Jim doesn't like the jersey exchange.
Oh, I thought you didn't like it, Dave.
Oh, I don't like it at all.
Jim hates it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then, Jim, you should like this.
Well, okay, John, explain what the NFL is thinking there.
Well, the NFL is thinking, okay, so now after 3 hours of battling on the field and, you know, being close and touching each other and spitting on each other and sweating on each other and all those different things, that it would be an overdue and a risk then to take your jersey off after a sweaty and spit on and all those different things and then, you know, trade that off. And so I know it's kind of laughable because, you know, it's a two-minute, three-minute exchange. But I guess, you know, they still want to stress, even though they can't do it during a 3-hour football game, you know, social distancing. And so I guess if you're going to do the shirt and or the jersey, what you're going to have to do is take it off and throw it. So that you can get, and they can do it that way. You know, and so it's, and again, the interesting part about this is that you know, the players haven't signed off on that yet. So we'll see if they're able to win that battle and exchange the jerseys.
Huh. Well, I'm guessing they'll find a way around it, won't they?
You figure, yeah. Because, I mean, how are you going to enforce it? You're going to have a police officer come over and arrest the guys in the jersey? I mean, security guards, take this guy away?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. The 570 says, Professor, is George Kittle any closer to signing a big deal with the Niners?
I would say no. The only thing I've heard is that I think he is being reasonable in what he's asking for, because the highest paid tight end is $10.5 million, and I think he's asking for 13. But like anything else, it is hard to get deals done. Again, unless you do something very unique, which is, of course, that's what Patrick Mahomes did, you know, by having a flat salary and flat salary cap for the next 2 years, because the one thing is, and so it's like, I think it's going to be a struggle. I know sometime in the last week, George expressed a little bit of frustration, but the frustration is league wide, because not knowing what the cap's going to be next year makes it tough to get a deal done this year.
Hey, John, Sammy Watkins said he's going to take a pay cut, receiver for the Chiefs for the upcoming season. And, you know, I just love this. This guy, you know, I feel like he gets it. He's like, hey, I got enough money for, you know, my kids, and they're going to be, you know, good for the rest of their lives. And I just want to play on a winner. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't necessarily expect it to be contagious, but I think it could, though. You know, I mean, that could at some point be where a lot of these guys get that are making, you know, enough money where they're like, hey, you know what? I have enough. What's more important to me is being on a winning team and in a good place, which he loves it in Kansas City, obviously.
Yeah, he does. And, of course, you know, he's accepted the transition that's happened. Is that, you know, he'd been a number one receiver for the longest time and being paid number one money. But, you know, who's the number one receiver on the Kansas City Chiefs? It's Tyreek Hill. And so now what he was able to do was, because he knew the option was, if he didn't take a pay cut, he was going to get cut. And so it's like, okay, stay on the team, and he's a free agent after the season. We'll see if they're going to have the room to be able to keep him next year. But, you know, he's looking at it. It's like, okay, I'll take a one-year deal at $9 million, you know, because number two receivers get between $9 and $11 million, and slot guys get around $11 million. So you take the pay cut, you stay on the team, and, you know, you win the favor of the coach and certainly win the favor of the quarterback.
John, reports are circulating in Washington, D.C. that Warriors might be the new nickname for the football team there. What would you think of that?
I like it. I like it a lot. You know, because, you know, the one thing is, you know, I'm sure the people were thinking, oh, well, geez, that's going to go right in the Indians. Well, hey, there was Warriors back in the old days, you know, in the thousands and, you know, all those things. So it's like a warrior, somebody that's just been a warrior for the longest time. I don't really put it on just Indians or anything like that. Certainly under any name change, it's got to stay away from anything that's Indian related, because this thing was way too long and happening. And, you know, it does sound like Dan's going to get something done here in the next 2 weeks. But of all the ones, you know, I know Red Tails is, you know, gaining some popularity, but it's still, you know, the Tuskegee Institute, of course, is what the World War II premise for that. But I think Warriors, in my opinion, is the best one.
John, I was looking at this thing I sent last night. It was apparently ESPN conducted a poll with 50 different NFL personnel, top 10 quarterbacks this upcoming season. Number one was Patrick Mahomes. Number two, Russell Wilson. And then you look at the top five, tell me which name is missing. Aaron Rodgers, number three. Deshaun Watson, number four. Drew Brees, number five.
I'd say, well, we're missing, what, Ben? Again, I know.
Or the MVP, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
He was number six.
I know. And, you know, and the way I always did that is, because I was the one, me and Sando and I were the ones that always did these, is that I would be, you know, I would always take the MVP and put him number four, because I've always had that thing when under the old way where it was like, okay, number five was either going to be Drew Brees or it's going to be Russell Wilson. And, of course, now what's happened is that Ben's gotten older. Aaron started to drop down. Tom Brady's older. He's, you know, you can see a little bit of arm strength drop like that. But yeah, I would have Lamar somewhere, maybe I would put him at four, but, you know, he's only done it for 2 years. He's only really done it great for 1 year. And so he still has a little more proven, but, you know, I would not put him ahead of Watson and Mahomes right now. I still think he and Russell are the two best.
Yeah. And Ben didn't make the top 10, just to give you the rest. So it goes Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, Watson, Breeze, Jackson, then Tom Brady at seven, Carson Wentz at eight, Dak Prescott at nine. And number 10 is Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
So
not a bad list.
Ben didn't make it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, I don't know, was he scratched just because of his elbow last year and only playing two games or one game and a half?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. But Stafford's a weird one, isn't he, John? I mean, the guy, he has good stats. I mean, he's a good quarterback. But I think Danny used to always say, you know, the worst thing is not having the right franchise quarterback. And I don't know. It's it'll be interesting to see how we look back on his career. I mean, he's still got a chance to win some playoff games, but he's been maybe the best quarterback that hasn't done well in the playoffs.
Well, you know, he and Kirk Cousins, I think you can put them in the same category. You know, Dak Prescott, of course, did win the one game against Seattle, so that does vault him into the top 10. But Stafford is a talent. I mean, he's got the ability to throw for 4,500 or 4,700 yards. I mean, the only problem is the team's been so bad around him. Remember, he came to a team that didn't win a game. That's why he was the first pick in that draft, and you know, had him go to the playoffs within 2 years and then lose the playoff games. And you look back and it's like, okay, is it the quarterback? Well, to a certain degree it is. Or was it the coaching or the lack of talent? Because again, the Lions, you know, they've made playoffs, but they've not won playoff games.
Hey, John, how about setting a date, the over under on when Matt Patricia gets fired?
I'd say, you know, because I think they'll give him a little bit more time. But what I don't have this in front of me. Whenever the bye week would be. So if he doesn't get off to a good start, which is probably going to be the case, I'd say right during the bye week.
It seems like hearing former players under him kind of call him out and just talk about not wanting to play there or be there. That should be enough. If you're the owner, you're going to be thinking, well, not only are we not winning, and we've got disgruntled players ripping our coach and our system here, it's going to make it tough to, you know, get any free agent to want to come play here. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like he's even if you feel like he's a decent coach, he's a liability.
Yeah, but again, that's, you can see so much of that in the Belichick assistants that get head coaching jobs. They try to be Belichick. And of course, you know, Belichick doesn't have he's not the best people person around. I mean, he's bossy. He's, you know, can say rough things and all that stuff, and everybody kind of takes that same tact and, you know, kind of bullies the players along and, you know, makes them do things that they don't want to do, and you got to do it this way, you got to do it this way, no, that's not the way you're going to do it, and then they end up not liking it. And but again, the difference is Belichick wins and all the other guys except for Bill O'Brien lose. And what's Patricia done? He's gone there, he goes to, you know, Darius Slay and tells him, it's like, you keep on thinking you're an elite cornerback. Well, you're not. why do you think you're so elite? And it's like, well, so that, there goes that relationship. And one of the things Belichick used to do that he's now changed on is that, he tried to knock away back in his Cleveland days, all the leadership guys, guys that have been veterans that provide leadership. And that's exactly what Patricia's done. I mean, like the Quandre Diggs trade was just ridiculous last year because here's a team captain and he's a good player and a good person. And you trade him for a fifth round pick because, it's like, oh, OK, it's like you lose loyalty when you do things like that.
John, I know we talked about Mostert, Raheem Mostert wanting to be traded yesterday. Any news on that, and where do you think the possible trade partner is in the NFL?
The only team I can think of right now would be Tampa Bay. But then, of course, if he goes down to Tampa Bay, he's not going to get any more money because they only have $4 million of cap room and they haven't signed their draft choices yet. So I think it's going to be tough for that to happen. They made the Matt Breida trade. But again, this is just another headache in that, what you always call the post-Super Bowl syndrome. And so now you've got a guy that, he's $2.5 million. Now you wonder, he ran so well and got 10 touchdowns that he scored, 762 yards in the last 10 games. But how much it was, obviously so much of it was him, but how much was the scheme? Because, I mean, even back to your days with your favorite Shanahan, Mike, I mean, he was always able to find backs. And if you didn't know their name, he can make them productive.
Professor, I've got a trivia question for you.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Cam Newton's going to wear number one for the Patriots, correct?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be the first Patriots player to wear number one since this player wore number one in 1987. John Clayton, who is the player?
I'm trying to remember. Was it Adam Vinatieri? I think it was a kicker. Was that not right?
You're correct. It was a kicker, John.
Okay.
He was from Texas. And I think he might have kicked barefoot.
Oh, really? Who was it?
Is it Russell Erkslavin?
Tony Franklin.
Tony Franklin, okay.
Was he barefoot? Do you remember, John?
Yeah, let's put it this way. I guess if you're Cam, you don't have to live up to much to be a successful number one wearing that jersey.
You're saying he wasn't impressive, huh?
Well, I mean, hey, he's got stinky feet because, again, he didn't have a shoe, so it's like...
he's got stinky feet. Okay. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The Professor John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com.